Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Be sure to throw myself a follow on Twitter, at Zach_Goodall, where you can find all of my, as I like to put it, great content and at the same time, terrible tweets. All my written work, all my podcasts are all promoted there, so be sure to check that out. As well as my co-host, Chris Thornton. You can be sure to follow him on Twitter, at MistoCristofo. Chris, say what's up to the people.
Well, I mean, unlike you, I actually have good tweets. So, I mean, don't want to brag.
It's a trade-off.
Don't want to brag, but there's like 691 people that follow me and look forward for these tweets. 692. Another one joined the Misto Army. So, you know, not to brag.
I have like six times the amount of followers that you have.
Quality over quantity.
Well, that's why I say I've got the quality content. You've got the quality tweets. This is the trade-off that we have here at Locked On.
Fair.
So if you want to follow some real self-righteous guys in their content and tweeting adventures, be sure to follow Chris and I a follow. Throw Chris and I a follow. This is why I don't get followers, because I say things wrong. But also follow the Locked On Jaguars handle. We are live tweeting during every game, and us also getting all of our content up from all the writers and of course Christopher and myself up on that handle, so be sure to give it a follow. Leave us a subscription anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can find us wherever you're listening to right now. Go ahead and just hit a button, get your little control center to pop up, and hit the subscribe button. Leave a rating, leave a review, let us know what we're doing well, let us know what we're doing not so well, and, you know, keep checking our stuff out. We appreciate all the listeners and followers that we have, and we're looking to grow even more. So we will go ahead and get right into it. He's like our favorite topic of the offseason. I think we have more episodes dedicated.
He makes it so easy.
He makes it really easy for us to talk about the Jags, because this team is good. It's not like we can really be hypothetical anymore, because the team is actually good and we don't have to hypothesize who they're drafting just back in October. But at the same time, Dante Fowler Jr. certainly gives us a lot of things to talk about. I think we've dedicated more episodes to him than we did training camp recaps, maybe. That's not to say we didn't do training camp work. It's that Dante Fowler is in the news every damn day. But we... So, after his seemingly long offseason, it appears that there are teams calling up the Jaguars about his availability. Kind of suspected for a little bit that there's a potential for him to be on a trading block. The team might just not want him around here anymore. Whether that's true or not, we're not sure. But obviously, other teams are starting to become interested. Today's coming from the New York Jets. I don't know how to say his name. I don't like this reporter, but he's a reporter anyway, and his name is Manish Mehta, I think. He's a guy that kind of trashed Doug Marrone in the past, so I don't really like him that much. And he is with the New York Daily News. He came out today saying, per source, the Jets did call the Jaguars about his availability, see exactly what the team would be asking for. The Jaguars didn't deny it. The Jets didn't deny it. So as far as we're concerned, this is a report. This is something that happened. And the fan base started to go a little crazy, as they do anytime Dante Fowler's name comes up, because there's such a tear in between the fan base as to what their thoughts are on him, whether he's a dude that still is working to get it all together and the talent's too good to pass up, or he's really not as talented as everyone thinks and he's a headache and he needs to be gone. So, Chris, what were your immediate takeaways from seeing this report come up today?
Oh, man, I was excited. I love me a good trade. Especially a guy like Fowler, who kind of presents himself. It's just a weird Fowler dynamic where I feel like fans and stuff outside of the Jaguars, and even fans inside the Jaguars, probably think higher of Fowler than he kind of really is, which is fine. Obviously, franchises probably have a correct view on him. But nonetheless, when I saw the report, I was like, it might be finally happening. I was excited, to say the least. I'll be more excited when I see something come out. And really, I mean, I don't even know if a bad trade would get me more, well, not excited, but more interested or not. But that's a process that will definitely be something that we'll all be looking forward to or looking closely at as the days go by.
And that's exactly how I feel about it, is that if I were in the GM chair, I would be looking to deal Fowler. a lot of people are saying, but what about if Yannick gets hurt? Well, I don't mean to jinx anything, and I'm knocking on wood. Yannick has never really been hurt in his time in Jacksonville, and honestly, I want him seeing more snaps. He had 75% of the defensive snaps last year. I would like to see him get into that 80 threshold. If we want to see him start to break these sack records, I would really like to see that, him being this dynamic pass rusher. You want him on the field as much as possible. And Fowler, he was solid in his role last year. He had 8 sacks in the regular season. A lot of them were created for him by interior pressure, a lot of stunts, not as much pure pass rushing expertise that Yannick provides. So while people are saying it's hard to replace 8 sacks, if you're doing it in a way that you're scheming it for athletes to make plays like Fowler, it's not nearly as hard as finding a true pass rusher like Yannick. So he's a little bit more replaceable than your Yannick Ngakoue or that number one pass rusher. So I think it wouldn't be too hard to fill the void that he would leave, especially if you're being compensated well for it. Mentioned, no matter what happens, he's going to be interested in exactly what the trade, how it would pan out. What are we talking about here in terms of fair compensation if Fowler is to be dealt somewhere?
Well, I mean, obviously, any right person is going to want to try getting as much return on value as possible. Obviously, you're not getting a first-round pick for the guy. I mean, that's just not going to happen. You got him, what, 3rd overall? You ain't getting close to that. I think, let's see. You have realistically, and then you have what you're probably going to get. Realistically, or actually, I would hope, and most Jags would probably hope, to get a day 2 pick for Fowler. I think, honestly, you could probably get that value if you try real hard enough. It might not be a 2019, it might be a 2020 day 2, but day 2 is day 2.
Yeah, I'm thinking somewhere in the day 2 range to early day 3. I think it would have to be 2019. I think that'd be the entire point of the trade, is to get a pick back immediately. I don't know if there's that type of player out there that you would trade Fowler for straight up. A lot of people are going to say Bridgewater. I'm a fan of Teddy Bridgewater. I think if he is healthy and can continue to play like he has this preseason, he's undoubtedly a better quarterback than Blake Bortles. At the same time, that's not a guarantee. He missed 2 years of playing football from a terrible knee injury. He has played in exactly that, 2 preseason games in 2 years. He's a guy that would have to be really rushed in as a quote-unquote insurance plan. He might not ever see a snap, because I don't know how easily they'd want to put Blake on the bench for him in a case where Blake isn't playing too well. We just don't know, because the team appears to be dedicated. So, although in a dream scenario, I would love for Teddy Bridgewater to be a quarterback here in Jacksonville, and I'd prefer him in a vacuum over Blake, there's way too many factors that suggest that that would be a bad idea. If there's any way that they would want to bring in Teddy Bridgewater, it would have to be that he is released and you bring him in as your third quarterback, with Cody Kessler sticking around as well, because you need that insurance with Bridgewater's injury history. I just don't think it's plausible in a trade scenario whatsoever.
Yeah, that's something that people don't think about when they're like, oh, trade for Teddy Bridgewater. Like, he's not going to come and step in and be your starter day one. It's not, he's not a, like a veteran season guy. Like, if Drew Brees were to come in here, I would be totally fine with him starting day one. I feel like he's been in the league long enough, he could probably pick up something up that fast. Teddy Bridgewater hasn't been in the league that long. He's probably been out longer with injury than he has been in the league playing healthy. So that's one of the biggest things right there, is he wouldn't be ready. So you'd be trading for a guy that you're not even getting. And let's say Blake comes in and starts off 4-0 and is just lighting it up. Then great, you just wasted a decent trade asset for a quarterback that might not even see the field if Blake continues to play as well, which they're hoping to do. And people are just kind of going on a different tangent here. People are really writing off Blake way too early. It was the 2nd preseason game against the best defense in football. And
he wasn't even that bad.
Yeah, it wasn't. He had the one interception, which I mean is made by one of the almost underrated safeties in the league, Harrison Smith. That's obviously a throw he'd wish to have back, and he said that he did. He wanted to have it back, but he made a bad play there. And then there was one other one that should have been intercepted, and it was dropped by like four different guys. But other than that, it was pretty good. There were some kind of ugly balls, but you're going to get that out of Blake, and you're going to get that against really good defenses. And I just don't understand why everybody was just running. I think people at this point are looking for an excuse to move on from Blake because people like Blake, the guy, but I feel like they don't like him as the players. A lot of people will tell you differently, but the minute Blake falters, they're the first to push him under the bus.
I made a note of that near interception play. I broke it down on Twitter. You guys can see it. I've got it filmed up. I've got the play drawn out against the coverage, all of the aspects of it. Showing off my football knowledge, guys. I'm not trying to brag, but I'm trying to brag. But I've got it drawn out, and you can see the best option on that play was to throw it to Keelan Cole on the outside because he had the cornerback. I think it was Xavier Rhodes. He had him beat on a curl route that would have converted the first down very easily. He had the spacing and everything he needed on that play. What stopped that from being Blake's target is that Cam Robinson was getting body bagged by Danielle Hunter right into Blake's vision. He couldn't see Cole at all on the outside. His next best option was Westbrook on that underneath route. Now, Westbrook slipped in his break right as Blake was releasing the ball. So there wasn't anything that could have been done. Westbrook would have been in front of that defender, probably caught that ball. Now, I didn't love the decision because he would have probably been killed by the underneath linebacker. He would have converted, but he would have gotten knocked by it. But I think it was a panic move by Blake that really wasn't as horrible as a decision. Not a good decision, but not as bad a decision as people are making it sound like. And it was just a series of unfortunate events. So really, I look at that game, and the only thing I really hated was that interception. Otherwise, it was fine, especially that touchdown scoring drive. I thought Blake had a really, really, really good drive there. So I wouldn't hold this Vikings game against him whatsoever, and that eliminates Teddy Bridgewater talk for me. But so, just pretty much back to Fowler. The trade talks are going to start stirring up. They will probably stick around. There could be other teams that call about their interest in him, and we'd have to see exactly what they'd be willing to offer. That'll take us to our next segment. When we come back, we're going to talk about some other teams that would be a true fit for Dante Fowler that could maybe give the Jaguars some solid compensation. And also kind of break down, you know, the difference between what a trade right now would be in comparison to a comp pick in 2020, which a lot of people have been suggesting. So we're going to compare the two and see exactly what would be more beneficial for the team. So I wrote the other day on LockedOnJaguars.com about Dante Fowler's trade market. The first team, and by that point, there were no reports of a trade. It was merely hypothetical. The first team I said was the New York Jets. Pound my chest a little bit. But after that, the other two teams that kind of stood out to me that made sense, that could give the Jaguars a solid bit of compensation, would be the Seattle Seahawks. They need pass rushers. That Legion of Boom is not booming anymore.
Legion of Gloom.
And the other one being the Kansas City Chiefs. They've got a powerful-looking offense with Patrick Mahomes at the helm, a lot of weapons around them, and no defense to really back it up, especially at pass rusher. I think Fowler would be an awesome fit there. So we'll kind of break down some of the fits. Who are some teams that you feel would be pretty solid landing spots for Fowler that would end up, you know, benefiting the Jaguars in a trade as well?
Well, the Kansas City Chiefs was one that we agreed on earlier. The Chiefs have two second-round picks this year from, I believe, last year. Who did they trade? This year's draft. Didn't they trade back?
Because they traded...
They traded Peters.
They traded Marcus Peters.
Yeah, Peters went to L.A., so now the Chiefs have two second-round picks, which both will probably be towards the end of the round if both perform to how both teams perform to how they're expected to perform. And then another kind of really dark horse candidate for me, I was just kind of looking at teams that had extra draft capital early. One that kind of jumped out to me could be the Indianapolis Colts in the division. So trading within the division is obviously a dangerous thing. You might be able to ask more. However, it could be more intriguing to the Jaguars because if the Colts falter like many think they will, then you will have a very early second round draft pick. Last year they picked... like third in the second round, and if they they're picking that high again this year, then you're getting almost a very late first round pick. So that could be something. I'd have to look at the fit and see everything, but I'm pretty sure they don't have a whole lot on the defensive side of the ball to be working with. So that'd be a trade that Marone maybe or maybe not. I'm not sure how, because I know he's Belichick won't like trade within the division or even the conference sometimes. But that was just a team that jumped out because they do have that extra capital. They do need help on defense. And it could almost be like when the Patriots traded Garoppolo to the 49ers, the 49ers made that trade, or the Patriots made that trade because the 49ers pick would essentially be almost a first-round pick. Garoppolo ends up winning them five games at the end, and it kind of loses the stock a little bit. But same thing here for the Colts.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And like you said, that could also really bump up the asking price as well, being in the division. I think Kansas City having a full draft order with an extra second-round pick also bumps that up. One thing about both of these teams, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Colts might have changed their defensive front. But as far as I know, both teams run 3-4s. Fowler would be a standing outside linebacker as a pass rusher rather than having his hand in the dirt in Jacksonville. That's what he did at the University of Florida. He was a standing pass rusher, played outside almost like a 7-9 technique standing pass rusher. That's where he thrived. It's how he's thrived in Jacksonville. Not necessarily standing here all the time, but stunting inside and being able to work in space as an athlete like we know he is. That's what got him drafted so high, is how athletic he is. Those type of schemes let him do that more. And I think that's why I've always wanted him to play Sam linebacker here, because they play their Sam linebacker like a 3-4 outside linebacker in the 4-3 under front. So I've always wanted that, never got my wish. Maybe Fowler could do that in one of these places and thrive himself. And if so, this turns into a win-win-win. Jacksonville gets compensated. Teams get another pass rusher with a lot of potential. If he balls out in a new scheme, he gets paid. Because all these teams, the Colts have a buttload of money. The Chiefs have, I think, $36 million in cap next year. The Jets have like $80 million in cap next year. Like, this could end up being the best scenario for all three people in this trade. So that could be something to just keep your eyes on, some different teams that definitely have a need at pass rusher. And then we can kind of break down what these trades would look like in comparison to compensatory picks. I don't know if I ever pronounced that right ever. But so pretty much a comp pick, for anyone that doesn't really understand, is if you have a player leave your team in free agency and sign a big deal elsewhere, you will get a draft pick in return for losing them. It's kind of how they try and balance things when you lose talent, is to be able to replace them with another extra pick. The highest you can go is, I think, third round, and it's all depending on the finances. I saw today Fowler would have to sign for $13 million a year elsewhere for the Jaguars to get a guaranteed comp pick in the third round, and it's not this upcoming draft. It would be in 2020, so two drafts from now, and it's not guaranteed. Fowler has a shady history. He has off-the-field concerns. It's not a guarantee that he'll ball out this year wherever he goes, because he'd be a new role for him as a starter. We have no idea if a team would be willing to pay him $13 million a year. Like, at all. That's far from a guarantee. It's much more likely that he gets a prove-it deal, and that could be in Jacksonville. That could be elsewhere. But a prove-it style deal, or maybe like a 2 or 3 year deal that's a little bit higher on guarantees but lower on average salary, in which case you're not getting a good comp pick if you're getting one at all. So, I don't know. Chris, what if you had to choose one or the other, would you rather take the risk on the comp pick or trade him for not maybe a third but like a fourth round pick?
That's a tough one. It'd probably be for the fourth. It'd probably depend on the team. If you're trading with a bad team and you get kind of towards the top of the fourth, then that might be a little more appealing than the back of the fourth. But I think guarantees are always better than hypotheticals. Yes, you could get a third. You could also get a seventh or not a pick at all. The market's weird. We see guys that just kind of never get signed. Fowler could just be one of those guys that maybe he does something stupid in the offseason. Nobody signs him, and bam, you literally lose Fowler for nothing, when you could have traded him for a fourth-round pick, which Dave Caldwell has been phenomenal in these later rounds of the draft. So a fourth-round pick would probably end up being a starter, like it has been. I mean, he got a starting linebacker in the seventh round in Leon Jacobs. So, I mean, I'll take that later value all day.
Yeah, I definitely agree. This is a league where you want to work with what's guaranteed, not only from the franchise perspective, but obviously the players want guarantees as well. So just wanted to throw that out there. It's, you know, that's just how the league works. So that should pretty much do it on our talks on Dante Fowler, our daily talks about Dante Fowler. So when we come back, we are taking your questions for the first time from our new Locked On Jaguars phone line, as well as I think we had one from Twitter that we're gonna throw in there. Josh Dixie, you're a lucky man. We'll answer those when we come back. So we will go ahead and get this thing rolling from our phone line. Chris has been managing the phone line for us. It's a new thing we're testing out here. We want to do it kind of like the radio. Obviously, we can't make it live calls yet because these are recorded podcasts. It's a work in progress. We want to get to that at some point. We're working on it. So for now, we're taking voicemails at our Google phone type thing hotline. You can go ahead and for the future leave us a voicemail with your takes, your questions, anything you want aired on the show. 904-878-2243. That is 904 Duval local, 878-2243. Chris, go ahead and get us rolling on some of this audio.
All right, so I'm going to try playing this audio, and if it comes out bad on Zach's end, I can just read the question. So this is the inaugural test, and you guys will be able to witness it. So this one's from Bailey Burns in Wichita, Kansas.
Hey, guys. This is Bailey Burns from Wichita, Kansas. Just had a couple questions relating to our Jaguars. First off, who do you guys think will lead the Jaguars in receiving yards this year? Second, do you guys anticipate that Alan Lazard makes the final roster? Thanks, guys. Really appreciate the show.
Thanks for the shout-out, Bailey. Were you able to hear that, Zach?
Yeah, I was able to hear that perfectly. So beautiful. This is good. We like it. We like this phone line. You guys should check it out.
All right, so just recapping, he asked, who do we think will lead the Jaguars in receiving yards this year? And then a follow-up question he asked, will Alan Lazard make the final roster? I'll let you lead off with your answer on the receiving yards question.
I would say it's going to be Keelan Cole like last year. They have what they have in him compared to most of their other guys in terms of what they've established is that he is the deep threat. Last year, he had almost 18 yards per reception. Not to say that, you know, DJ Chark and Dede Westbrook can't do that as well. I don't think Marquise Lee would do that. But at the same time, like, we've seen a lot of growth out of Cole this offseason. He's the deep threat, but he can also work the short field too. So he's able to provide both, and I think his, you know, deep threat potential is just the cherry on top, and I think that that will continue to show throughout the year. I think he'll be the guy that leads the team. The dark horse being Chark. If Chark does get a significant role in the offense, he's a dude that can make plays deep on. He can make plays on pretty much every route that you ask him to run. That's what I tracked during camp, but a lot of them were on the deep routes, the corners, posts, go routes. He was able to make plays on those, so be curious to watch. I think that it will be Cole, though, for now. Chris, what about you?
I think the safe answer is Cole, but I kind of want to roll with the rookie and say DJ Chark, some point in the season, turns it up and never looks back. Chark went... I'm really hoping that they utilize him a little more in this Falcons game because I feel like they're kind of underusing him at this point. And it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, he's a rookie, so he kind of has to earn his reps. But I think somewhere in the middle of the season, he's going to get an opportunity to really come out, or he's going to have a breakout game, and it's just going to be all over from there. It wouldn't surprise me. I'll say this hot take right now. I think DJ Chark breaks 1,000 this year.
Oh, wow. That surprises me. I don't know if any Jaguars receiver
dark breaks 1,000 this dark year. Dark horse rookie of the year candidate.
Whoa! I am holding you to this. I am tagging old takes exposed.
So, DJ Chark, don't let me down.
DJ, if you're listening, you better. Otherwise, you're going to get old takes exposed. Well, something to do with you will.
If Chark breaks 1,000 or wins Rookie of the Year, I'll buy his jersey.
If
Chark, a real one.
If Chark breaks 1,000 yards, I will buy you a steak dinner, Chris.
All right, so I get steak dinner, and I'll buy myself a DJ Chark jersey. It's a win-win.
I am a huge believer in DJ Chark. I think I'm one of his bigger fans right now after the camp he's had, but I don't see that happening. So, well, you can remember this.
It's about to be now, it's about to be Chark week, week in and week out.
So, the second part of the question, Alan Lazard. I'm a fan of Lazard. I think he's had moments in camp where he's looked real solid. He also hasn't elevated. He's been sticking with the third team for the majority of his play. A little bit of special teams work, and he's done decent there. He's done some decent stuff in the red zone. At the same time, Rashad Green's had a really good preseason other than a muffed punt, but I think he had a really good punt return against the Vikings. He's been consistent with the offense as well for the most part throughout camp and the preseason. Mickens has played a lot of the first team return roles, has also done pretty well in the offense, and Shane Wynn has done a great job making big plays in training camp so far. Not as many on the playing field, but in camp, he's been consistently making plays, and he's done it against some of the guys like at the top of the cornerback chart, like A.J. Boye. I don't think I remember seeing any on Ramsey, but Tyler Patman, he's been making plays against them. So I do think it's a three-way battle between those guys because those guys really offer the potential to play the slot, and they might be trying to rotate that guy in with Cole or some other people. But we'll see. I think Lazard might end up being a practice squad guy unless another team takes him on and maybe tries to convert him to tight end. We'll see. I don't think he'll end up making this roster, which sucks because I had a prediction at the start of camp that I thought he'd beat those three out just because his skill set was so different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think Lazard makes the 53. I think he'll be a practice squad candidate, and then I don't know. We'll see where he goes on from there.
And before we take it back to the phone line, this leads us into our question from Joshua Dixie Walker on Twitter. Who's the most likely player who will start the year on the practice squad? And of those, who's most likely to be called up during the year? I don't really have a specific guy. I think it's any one of these camp body linebackers. And now, please forgive me, as two of them have really hard names to pronounce. Menez Hungalu, Andrew Motuapuaka, Nick DeLuca, who was just signed today, maybe Deion King or Reggie Hunter. These guys have all been depth guys. They've all made their own types of plays other than DeLuca was just signed today, but he's a guy the Jags met with before in the past. At the Senior Bowl, he's a guy that, you know, Jaguars Twitter loves to call him Gritty, a guy that could probably contribute on special teams. I think any of these guys, because you've got Jacobs, the rookie, already starting at Sam linebacker. You've got Miles and you got Telvin. Telvin's had some injuries in the past. None of them have ever been significant, but he almost has an injury like every year. Blair Brown and Donald Payne are your depth guys, and Payne is still, he's been flashy, but at the same time, like, he's a young guy, former safety. Brown's in his second year as well, and then you have no one else at linebacker. So I think any one of these guys is kind of pick who you want. We'll see who ends up being a guy that the team keeps. They might want to keep six linebackers on, but if they do keep five, really any one of these guys, you could probably just throw their name in a hat, pick them out, and put them on the practice squad. And as the year goes on, they might have to pull someone up due to injuries. So we'll go from there.
Yeah, I'll keep my answer quick. I think I'll go back to Alan Lazard. Wide receiver room got hit with some injury bugs last year, and I think that probably will happen again. I don't want to say Marquise Lee, but it'll probably be Marquise Lee. So Alan Lazard might make it his way up, but that's probably my candidate is Alan Lazard.
And now let's take it back to the phone line. We got two more questions there before we'll be logging it off.
All right, so this is the next one from Boog from Arizona.
Hi, this is Bug from Arizona, and I was wondering, who's going to be the odd man out for slot corners, considering you have Meeks, Trey Herndon emerging now, and you just spent some decent money on DJ Hayden. All three are playing pretty decently. I think that's going to be a hard decision for the Jags. What are your guys' opinions on that? Keep up the good work, guys. Listening to you guys makes being a Jags fan that much easier. Thank you for all your hard work.
We really appreciate that, Boo. We love the hear that. We're glad that we're able to help all listeners out there get as much Jags info as they need. With that question, you know, it's been interesting to watch the slot corner battle-ish thing going on, because I didn't think there was going to be a battle. I thought this was Hayden's spot, just because they did spend money on him. He's a guy that has performed well in camp, don't get me wrong. I don't think I've really seen him do much wrong at the position. It's not as much him doing stuff poorly as it is other guys are forcing a competition. Tyler Patman has been given multiple chances to play with the first team at corner, with Jalen Ramsey missing time at the start of camp after his child was born, and recently when he was suspended for a week during the Vikings camp. He started this past week and he made a really flashy play on the, I think, second or third play of the game. I broke that one down on Twitter as well that you guys can check out. Gifted wrote up the play, all the coverage. It was a confusing play to cover, and he made a real nice pass breakup on it. He's kind of forcing his hand into that nickel competition. Trey Herndon and Quinton Meeks have both been really impressive. Herndon seems to be really instinctual on when to break on plays. Meeks has a knack for being able to find the ball. They've shown this both in the preseason and in training camp. It's going to be intriguing to watch. I don't know if Hayden has this position locked up much anymore. I think all of these guys make the roster. Herndon, Meeks, Hayden, and Patman, as well as the obvious Ramsey and Boye. It'll be curious to see. I like Tyler Patman starting at nickel week one over DJ Hayden, and Hayden being the primary depth guy, flipping that from what I thought it was going to be just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I'll probably go Patman as well. I like Patman over Hayden, so that's something that I personally would take. Hayden still might have the leg up because he got paid, but Patman and then Hayden probably in that order.
Then I think we had one last question to bring on air.
All right. So this is from Sharif from Dallas, Texas. A lot of West Coasters. Or Central, I should say. Central and West.
Hello, Locked On Jaguars. My name is Sharif. I'm a Sharif Hadi, and I call in from Dallas, Texas. If anyone wins Defensive Player of the Year on the Jaguars, who will it be and why? For me, personally, I think it will be Yannick Ngakoue. Thank you very much.
I want to say Yannick because I think this chip on his shoulder is finally going to be put to the most use it's ever been put to. He feels disrespected. He's been vocal about it in his pressers and his tweets, and I think everyone in Jacksonville knows that there is rage right now coming from Ngakoue. We saw that in his fight with his position mate in Dante Fowler, the guy that he replaced a week into his professional career. I think the easy answer is Yannick. I think he's going to lead the team in sacks over Campbell, for sure. I think this is Yannick's year to lead the team in sacks. I think it's going to be AJ Boye that wins it. Boye, there is an argument around among Jags fans, and it's like the best possible argument you could have, is that people like to say that the Jaguars have the best cornerback in the league, and then people say, well, who are you talking about? Because you don't know if they're talking about Jalen Ramsey or they're talking about Boye. Like, you could very well go either way, because they are opposite type of corners, and they both complement each other so well that it could literally be one way or the other. You can't get mad at whoever is someone's answer for best corner in the league. Boye had 6 interceptions last year. He was a second-team All-Pro. The former Houston Texan looks to have been the absolute perfect signing for the secondary. He's a lockdown guy just as much as Ramsey. Not as much a talker, but he's got incredible footwork, incredible technique. He's able to match routes so well pretty much anywhere except comebacks is the only thing I've really seen him struggle on. But other than that, I think he held a passer rating to pretty much equivalent to spiking the ball on every single play throughout the majority of the year last year. So I think if Boye can keep this up with this pass rush helping him be able to get forced coverage sacks as well as, you know, pressure on the quarterback, forcing them into bad throws against Boye, I think he can keep this up, and I think he will be the player of the year for the defense.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to go against Yannick. I said earlier, like early into the offseason, I said this dude's going 16-plus this year, and I firmly believe that, especially with the new arsenal moves that he seems to have learned from Von Miller, who is a perennial Pro Bowler, might be in the Hall of Fame, probably will be in the Hall of Fame when his career ends, but that's a decent while from now. But you bring up a good point with AJ, but honestly, if we're going cornerback group, I think I got to go with Jalen. Jalen, I think, is going to come out this year and just dominate. Last year was kind of like the year that he dominated last year, don't get me wrong, but I think he's going to grow even more from last year, and I think he's going to be a force. If we're still making bold predictions, I think Jalen's going to get 8 picks this year.
Oh my God.
He's doubling.
They're going to be
2.0. 2.0 is doubling down from last year. 4 picks to 8 picks.
If we thought that last year was crazy and that the Jaguars almost broke records for defensive markings, like, Chris has them shattering records, like rewriting the history book.
Yeah. Unique 16 plus, Jalen, 8 interceptions, DJ Chark, 1,000-plus yards as a rookie and a dark horse for rookie of the year. Guys like Saquon will probably get more hype than Chark, but, you know, Chark might make himself known by the end, so we'll see.
If all three of these predictions come true, like, I'll pay, like, a month of your rent, man. Like, I don't know. Like, hold me to that, I guess.
I'll send these to the players, and maybe they can get me a nice cake or something.
That'd be nice. Well, I think that'll just about do it for us here at Locked On Jaguars. So be sure to throw us a follow on Twitter at Locked On Jaguars, at @Zach_Goodall, at Misto Cristofo. Throw us a subscription, a bookmark. Do what you got to do to stay in tune with the content that we will keep producing as the season is just about knocking on our doorstep. And we will be breaking down this third preseason game against the Atlanta Falcons later this week.